Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and I'm here with...
Gary DiMattei.
That's right.
Hi, Karen.
And it's hard to believe it's time for another It's All About Food. And we are broadcasting from...
California!
We didn't have that song right.
Let's do that again. California, here we come, right back where we started from.
Well, you started here.
But we met here.
That's true. We started together.
We started here.
That's a very good point.
Not far from where we are right now.
Exactly. We're staying in a cozy little town called Palo Alto. Palo Alto.
Home of so many iconic things happening, like Facebook and Google and, oh, geez, so many high-tech companies that are now part of our daily lives.
Right, a lot of little startups started in garages in Palo Alto.
Palo Alto, oh my gosh.
Because Stanford is right here.
Stanford is.
Stanford University.
And it's gorgeous here, but it's still kind of early and we're sort of worried about the fires.
Well, the fires usually start around fall, August, yeah. September.
Might start earlier these
days. But there's talk that it's the second year of a drought and things are dry. So we may have to pack up the car.
and head on out.
Hopefully not. Hopefully not for everyone involved.
Exactly.
Which is everyone.
Yeah, everyone.
Everyone.
And a lot of folks are saying that, you know, these droughts and things of that nature that are happening in our world are because of folks who eat meat.
Some people are saying that. Some people have been saying it for decades.
Yeah.
You're looking at me.
Some people have been saying this for a long time.
Well, humans are to blame.
What you eat affects the environment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course it affects the animals, and of course it affects your health. So a lot of folks are focusing on health now because we're all basically narcissists and we don't want to die. So we start to actually wake up when someone says, you know, what you put in your mouth might be affecting your health. So we're starting, a lot of us start that way by saying, well, I went vegan because I wanted to get healthy. But in reality, we here at Responsible Eating and Living like to make vegans because we want to help the animals. And then we talk about the environment and we talk about health. But really, it's about the animals. And we saw a lot of animals.
We saw a lot of animals.
Because...
primarily cow animals.
Cows grazing in wide open spaces on what you discovered was public land. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, Karen. Well, let's back up.
Sure.
We left New York in a car.
In a car. We didn't fly.
And we drove cross-country, and it took us seven days.
Because we drove about 6 to 7 hours a day.
We didn't do it crazy.
Yeah.
We did 4 hours the first day. We drove to Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, my alma mater, Bucknell University.
Bucknell University. And we saw one of your favorite professors, a chemical engineering professor, Dr. Palmershine.
That's right. And that was fun. And then we drove the next day to South Bend, Indiana.
Yes.
So we drove from Pennsylvania to Ohio, to Indiana.
We actually saw Notre Dame University. So we went from Bucknell to Notre Dame.
Yeah, I like going to college campuses for a lot of reasons. Usually the neighboring environment is friendlier.
Friendlier.
Vegan friendlier.
Because we're talking about food, because this program is called It's All About Food. So we're talking about food, and when we stop, we want to make sure we can find some food.
It was an interesting time to be traveling out and about, especially after the CDC announced that we could go outside without masks if we're vaccinated. And it was very confusing about when we could and when we couldn't. But we were always wearing masks inside and out.
And when we got to the hotel rooms, we had our alcohol wipes and our disinfectant, and we wiped everything down, even though all of the hotels that we stayed in, the rooms were sealed after housekeeping went in there and disinfected.
They made it look like they had gone the extra mile, but
there was literally a seal on the door, and you broke the seal when you walked in.
And then like I've always said about eating in restaurants, it's always a leap of faith. It's a leap of faith to hope that they've done the job that they're promoting.
Yeah, so if you're heading out on the road this summer, we suggest you follow our simple instructions and get some wipes and wipe down your hotel room. It doesn't take long.
We brought our own pillows, too.
We did bring our own pillows. And some folks I've talked to bring their own blankets. And,
right. We didn't go that far.
No, we brought our own pillows.
So we drove from New York to Lewisburg to South Bend, and then we went to Omaha, Nebraska. Then we were in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Right.
Salt Lake City, Utah. Reno, Nevada. And then we ended up in Palo Alto, California. We prepared before we left what we wanted to bring along. And of course, I wanted to make sure we had food.
And we brought a lot of food. We brought an ice chest. And another thing about being in these hotels is they have ice machines. We would always replenish the ice chest with some ice. And that worked out really well.
It did. A lot of the hotels had mini refrigerators, which also helped. And what's interesting to me is that the lower end chains typically had microwaves, whereas the fancier higher end ones did not.
But all of the hotels had refrigerators.
All except the one in Nebraska.
Right.
Which was really a lovely hotel. Before we left, I had prepared roasted soy nuts and roasted garbanzo beans. And I probably made too many. I made bags and bags. I cooked the beans.
They were delicious.
I seasoned them all differently. We have a recipe at responsibleeatingandliving.com for roasted garbanzo beans.
And you could just do the same method with soybeans.
You can, except the soybeans I didn't cook first. I just soaked them. And then I roasted them. Because they're really soft quickly.
Oh, that's interesting.
But the garbanzo beans I did cook. I did soak them and then cook them and then roasted them after I seasoned them. But they're really a fun snack.
Yeah. And then I was thinking, should we bring some Clif bars or some vegan power bars? And you said, why do that when I can make them? And they were fantastic. Tell us how you made those.
Right. I wrote them down, the mixes that I made, and I have yet to publish them, so I'll have to do that. But I made these little balls. One I called pecan pie balls.
Yeah.
That were mostly pecans.
They were like this truffles.
Dates and some seasoning. And then another one was an almond joy, which was my favorite, I think.
Right.
That had cocoa powder in it and almonds and coconut
all rolled up together.
Really good. And then I made a bar. They were on the soft side, but
when
we left the house, I had put them in the freezer to keep them firm, and then we kept them in the cooler, so they stayed a pretty good texture. But the bars, I wanted to get a little exotic.
Yeah, they were really great.
So they had apricots and
dried apricots. All of the fruit we're talking about is dry.
I think it had sunflower seeds in it, and I seasoned it with cardamom and coriander.
Very exotic.
But it
and
was
a little ginger, right?
A little ginger, yeah. It was
fresh
a good
ginger.
Mix.
Yeah, they all stayed really well in the ice chest. What I did was I sliced very thinly some sweet potatoes, two kinds of sweet potatoes, purple sweet potatoes and the yellow sweet potatoes. And then I also sliced some Yukon Gold potatoes and I roasted them like potato chip style in the oven. And they dried out really well. And we brought a big bag of those on the road with
us. They were like potato chips, oil-free, salt-free, just potatoes, potato chips.
Right, they were really good. And we brought some thin stackers, what I would call a rice cake, but they're even thinner than a rice cake.
That's why they're called thin stackers.
Right,
and the ones we get have not only brown rice like most rice cakes, but they have red rice and quinoa.
Yeah, and what we didn't want to do is we didn't want to bring salty, oily snacks. We wanted to keep it clean. And we did. I think we succeeded.
We did really well. So we brought peanut butter with us and our own
date paste. And we made a lot of baked tofu. And we brought some avocados and some apples. We bought a lot of apples.
Mm-hmm.
Some oranges. And you even brought a couple of lemons. A couple of New York lemons.
Right, and limes.
The only thing we didn't have was fresh produce. Now, we could have gone crazy and brought in a bunch of crudité and things of that nature, but we wanted to buy our produce fresh wherever we decided to stop. There was a lot of firsts on this trip for me. Walking into a grocery store, that was a first.
In over a year, right.
Actually, going to a restaurant and eating restaurant food, that was a first.
Yeah, so twice on our trip, we ordered takeout.
Takeout, yeah. We didn't sit in a restaurant, but we ordered takeout. And the first place we ordered takeout was in...
It was in South Bend, Indiana.
Karen has this wonderful ability to find the most secluded strip mall vegan restaurants. I mean, you think you're in a dry town, and what I mean by dry is no vegan restaurants. And then all of a sudden, Karen comes up with locating one in this wild little neighborhood of South Bend. And it was this family-owned vegan restaurant, and it was awesome. And we were able to...
Gary, it's 2021. Right. And I'm going to share with you the tool that I use to find these little out-of-the-way places.
Right.
It's called Google Search.
Right.
And there are some apps even. The Happy Cow website is pretty good. They've been around a really long time. And it's pretty easy these days to find vegan places, if they exist.
I know. And I set you up for that because I knew you were going to plug Happy Cow, and that's what I wanted.
But what you couldn't tell is, unless you looked on a map and tried to find the images, you couldn't tell what the restaurant was going to look like until you showed up. I didn't know it was in a strip mall until we got there.
Well, that's okay. I mean, I have learned over the years traveling with you that these are, and always have been, they turn out to be the best places to get food, to get vegan food, because they're awesome. They really do a great job in preparing it. They put a lot of love into it. You can tell that the family is working real hard to make ends meet, especially now during COVID. They're complying with all the mask rules. They're doing everything they can. They have hand sanitizer out there for folks to use. Their children are usually working in the restaurant as well. I really enjoy going to them and supporting them. I'd rather support a family operation like that than a big chain. Even though if the big chain is selling vegan, I will support it. I've learned from you not to be a snob, in other words.
Right? Well, what I liked about this restaurant is they have a massive menu. You could look online. It's called Panellia's, and it's in South Bend, and it's vegan. And they have a massive menu, like I said. And I ordered this one dish that was pretty clean. It was steamed kale and brown rice. It had a veggie meat. It wasn't over-seasoned or salted. It was pretty light. And it was good.
Yes, it was.
And we got those summer rolls that right. were great to eat in the car because you could hold them and eat them.
Those were excellent. And they weren't fried. They were rice paper wrapped with some baked tofu and some mint and some jicama.
There was jicama in there.
It was really delicious. Crunchy, a little sweet, a little salty. Really good. Really good place. So if you're in South Bend, Indiana, and you want some vegan fare, head on over to...
Panellia's. Oh. Okay, let's just share what the added bonus was on this trip.
Yes.
You had to do a reading.
Oh, yes. So as we left New York, I got a call from a producer in New York wanting me to do a reading. Of course, it's all on Zoom. And so I said, of course, absolutely, because that's part of our trip. We packed everything to continue to video submit auditions while we're on the road. And we brought lights and vocal tracks, and we brought the complete works of Anton Chekhov and everything we needed to continue to submit auditions on video now, because most of the auditions are now video submissions. So we wanted to make sure we could continue to audition even though we were on the road. And as my good fortune would have it, one of the producers that I've worked with, done some readings for in New York, had called as we were leaving and asked if I would be a part of a reading of a new play. And I said, absolutely. And so I said, when is it? And this was on Wednesday when I was asked. And they said it's on Friday. So that would put us in South Bend. So we arranged for late checkout, and I was able to do the reading in the hotel room. And then we were off to Nebraska.
Yeah, we were a little off schedule, but we just arrived in Nebraska late.
We got to Nebraska late, checked into this historic hotel. We needed ice, and there were no ice machines because it was a really cool hotel. They weren't the type of hotel that would have ice machines in the hallways. It was kind of posh. But the hotel manager, I think this hotel was called the Paragon.
Yeah.
The hotel manager was really awesome, working behind the bar. And I went down to the front desk, and the man behind the front desk you know, said, I don't have any ice, really. I mean, I could get you a little packet. And then the hotel manager overheard him and said, no, wait a minute. Now, how much ice do you need? And I said, I just need like a bucket of ice if you've got it for our cooler, because we're going to head back out on the road. And he said, I'll bring it up to your room. So the hotel manager personally brought up a 20-pound bag of ice to our hotel room. And we had an ice party.
We had an ice party, right.
We were singing songs from Frozen. I mean, that's how much ice
we
had.
Let it go. Yeah. Let it go.
We got a little out of hand with the ice. But no, it was great. Ice baths are fun.
Ice baths are in.
Yeah.
I wonder if people in hotels ask for ice so that they can take ice baths.
Well, we certainly could, although we didn't have a tub.
We didn't have
a tub.
We had
a shower. But I stuck my face in a sink full of ice, and it felt great. Because I did most of the driving, all of the driving, and Karen navigated. And the funny thing is that it was Highway 80 all the way, and I'm segueing to Highway 80 here, but whenever I'd say, okay, so how do we get to California, Karen would have her stock answer. And
take I-80 West! I-80 West!
It was a straight shot. And now the segue, the terrain. Let's talk about that.
Right, so we're now in Nebraska.
Right.
And you may have heard my intro last week when I rebroadcast my interview with Mike Hudak from 2009, where we talked about the Bureau of Land Management.
Yes.
And this was really something. It took me a while to figure out what I was seeing, but miles and miles and miles of cows grazing on land that looked so dry and barren. And at first, we're listening to music, we're having lively conversations, we're snacking on our garbanzo nuts and whatever else.
And our balls. We're snacking on our balls and our nuts. What?
And then my subconscious talked to my conscious and said, look there, you know what you're seeing. And then I realized all of these cows were grazing on public lands. And public lands, as you may remember from last week's conversation, are typically undesirable
right.
properties that are not lush and are difficult to grow on. And I was saying, what are these cows eating?
Yeah. First of all, just that statement is so accurate, because when you see this site, when you see a cow in the middle of these barren sagebrush looking land, you think to yourself, this animal does not belong on this land. It looks so out of place. Then we discovered, because you started quickly doing some research, that cows were brought over here from another land, and they are not indigenous to any of these territories.
Yeah.
The thing that was on these lands were bison.
Bison and a whole lot of other species that we've seemed to
wipe out
to some extent. Yeah.
Right. Ironically, your Bucknell University mascot is the bison.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I just thought I'd throw that in.
So miles and miles and miles of cows grazing, and some places not many cows, and in other places more. And then from time to time, there was a feedlot, and if you know what a feedlot looks like, there's no grass. It is intentionally barren. It's just dirt. And these animals, which are meant to eat grass and meant to leisurely roam the prairie or wherever and chew and enjoy and nuzzle with their babies and their friends, they're on this dry, dirty ground, and then they're fed some kind of mixture of foods that make them fat, because even the grass-fed cattle that are served, that are raised for grass-fed beef that's supposed to be superior, they all end up in a feedlot at some
right.
point towards the end to fatten up. It's rare to get a cow that has been raised for beef that hasn't ever been on a feedlot. And it's just, it's abysmal.
Yeah.
It's abysmal.
And if you want to see some footage of an actual feedlot that Karen and I were actually on, watch our documentary, a 70-minute documentary called The Lone Vegan, where we've talked about this before on this program, but Karen was invited to be on a panel and be the one vegan on a panel talking to 250 cattle producers who probably, for the most part, produced cattle on feedlots, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And this was for an annual bull sale. And the punchline that we always use is the cattle producers came up to Karen afterwards and said, "You have more balls than our bulls." So we survived.
We did survive that event.
But and you sang the national anthem.
Yeah, that was a good time.
But anyway, if you want to see footage of feedlots, that's where you would go to see Karen on a feedlot.
But driving across and visually seeing this mile after mile, it's stunning. It sinks in after a while.
It's depressing because you're driving along and you want to make the most and the best of everything, but then you keep seeing, well, it's depressing for vegans, all of these animals thrown out there to graze, and then you know eventually what their fate is. They are not allowed to grow old, and they are slaughtered.
And what I relearned last week from re-airing the broadcast with my Hudak,
let's get into that. That's really interesting
it's
stuff.
It's not only is that land used for grazing marginal to begin with, but the cows are making it worse than it is because they're eating up whatever wants to grow. And if they're near some water, if they're near a creek, if they're near something, an area where fish are, they will eat the baby trees, the saplings.
Right.
So that a few decades later, there are no trees.
To give shade to those areas where fish are.
And give support to the soil to hold the banks up.
Right.
And so it's affecting so many things. Not just the cows themselves are affected with this abysmal life that they have, but all life around them. And then, of course, you may know that if you happen to be an animal that isn't a cow, but may be competing with what's available on the land that the cows are using, well, we just want to get rid of them. And the Bureau of Land Management has approved all kinds of slaughter of animals that are threatening the ranchers and the cows that they're growing. And there was just an article that I posted on Facebook last week about horses.
Right.
That are going to slaughter because they're in the way.
Yeah, and I'm sure wolves are another one that...
Absolutely. All kinds of animals.
And from tiny, tiny little microscopic organisms that rely on this land.
Ecosystem.
Right. To the big, giant things that live in the hills. They're all being threatened.
So I imagine that some people, when they drive across country and they see these bucolic images and they think how lovely these farms and the cows are happily grazing, they don't see what we see.
No. And there's a lot of red barns. Be ready. A good game to play is count the red barns. You'll count thousands of red barns. It's amazing.
So my question is, and I haven't researched it yet, is why are so many barns red?
Yes. Does anybody know why you paint your barns red? I didn't see any white barns. And I grew up on a cherry orchard where the barns were whitewashed. But out in the middle of the plains, which I guess that's what this is called. We were driving through the plains, the plain states. Barns are red. And it was weird to see every now and then these bright green pastures that are being watered with sprinklers to graze cows on. And I you know, it just screamed of, well, this farm must be promoting grass-fed beef because they've put these lawns in the middle of nowhere. And they're putting all of this water on these lawns, and they're making these green patches of lawn, and there's cows grazing on them, and then surrounding these green pastures of lawn that was clearly brought, there's this sagebrush and barren land.
I was wondering what those things were, and you told me they were sprinklers, because I didn't see a lot of them in operation.
Right.
But then it made me really curious, why are they using these kinds of sprinklers? I thought we knew that these raised sprinklers are really inefficient because the water often evaporates before it hits the ground.
Right.
And I always thought that drip irrigation was better. So we brought a hotspot with us, so we had internet all the time, and while Gary drove, I was looking
navigating.
Up stuff and navigate. Oh, yeah, navigating. I-80 West. Go I-80 West.
Straight shot. It's a straight shot. If you want to drive across the country, take I-80 West if you're not wanting to see any sights, because it really gets you here.
Yeah, it's quicker.
Yeah, and we saw so many trucks on I-80. So many trucks keeping America moving.
Yeah, and it made me... I want to get to that in a minute, but regarding drip irrigation, what I learned is that drip irrigation is a little more complex in order to install and more difficult to repair, whereas these movable sprinklers are a lot easier to manage, but right. they're less efficient.
Right.
So there's this, so it seemed obvious to me these people made a choice that was easier.
Right.
But was not so helpful or not as nice to the environment. It's a lose-lose-lose
situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were seeing all these trucks and cargo trains.
Right.
And most of the trucks were FedEx trucks.
UPS, FedEx, and then some that didn't have any identifying marks on them. They were just moving. They were moving things to consumers.
That's all we thought about. All the things that seemed so easy for us to order. While we were driving and seeing this, we started to realize how complicated it really is and
yeah.
how devastating on the environment it is.
I-80 West is really wall-to-wall semis, wall-to-wall trucks. And now they're not just double-deckers, or I don't know what the proper term is for long haulers. There's three
big
cargo van thingies. I'm sorry. I'm insulting.
Don't know truck terms.
All of the truckers out there, but I apologize, and thank you to the truckers who are keeping
absolutely
America moving.
So you go on Amazon and you think, okay, I want something. Clickety clickety click. They make it so easy and the best price. Click, and then what happens? These people. There are people that are involved. First, they have to make the product right and store the product. And then somebody's got to put it on a truck and somebody's got to drive the truck and get it to you. It is so complicated. And most of those people are so poorly paid.
Yes.
So you can get your inexpensive little thingy.
And they have families and they travel. Some of them have these huge cabs where they sleep in their cabs. Obviously, most of you know what I'm talking about, but this was an eye-opening experience for me. And my dad was a trucker. He delivered furniture locally. He didn't drive across country, but I grew up with a Teamster for a father, so I always knew about people needing to drive truck to get people their furniture and things of that nature. But driving across country, you think about these folks that are traveling with, some of them, with their pets. And it's just so, when you stop to get gas, you see them taking their dogs out for walks and things. And you just realize that these are people who have families, who have lives, who are, you know, out on the road. Hours and hours and hours to bring us our stuff. To bring us our stuff. So thank you to the truckers out there who are keeping America moving, as the billboards say, outside of that one little town. What was it called? Little America.
Little America.
Little America, I think it was.
It
called.
Was like a little
it was like
restaurant and shop.
Yeah, 45-cent soft serve cones. That
there,
was the
75 cent.
75 cent, was
there
that
were,
it?
There were billboards all along the way. 75-cent ice cream cones at Little America.
That was really...
So I don't have an answer here, and I don't want to sound like I'm passing judgment. What I'm just saying is, first, we all need to be paying attention and
right.
really thinking about where everything comes from. Maybe looking a little more deeply at our surroundings and see what's really happening.
Right.
And this is not easy to do.
You have to be aware that every time you buy something or pick something up, or for me, it's always been to try and connect the dots and see how it got to you. And driving across country is a real eye-opener with respect to that comment that I just made. How it gets to you, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of effort to get the simplest items to what we consider department stores or grocery stores, or now to our front door. And everything is so convenient. And is there a reason for this? Is there a reason why they are making things more and more convenient?
Well, convenient sells.
Right.
Convenient sells, but someone's paying the price.
So just like when we make our snacks for the road, that requires effort. And so you could either be crazy like us and go through all of these hours and hours and hours of preparation, or you could just go to the grocery store and buy several bags of chips. And what we did, I think, really not only nourished us in a better way, but it also nourished our souls, because we understood that it takes effort to make these things. And the next time you buy a bag of chips, you realize, wow, this really does require a lot of effort. And then you have to ship the chips. I mean, in New York, we get things from California all the time.
Yep.
Even fresh produce. When we order our fresh produce from Go Organic, sometimes our strawberries come from San Jose, California. How did they get there? One of those trucks. One of those refrigerated trucks drove across country, probably Highway 80, and brought us some.
Absolutely. And now, what are they talking about? They're talking about getting driverless trucks.
And Highway 80 is supposedly going to be the route for the driverless trucks.
Because it's straight.
Right.
And easy.
And that's sad, because a lot of people will be out of work.
Food for thought there. So I think ultimately, in Karen's world, I would like to see people growing their food in their communities, and communities are sharing knowledge and essentials, but keeping it as local as possible so we don't have all of this back and forth. And then, of course, everybody should be vegan.
Right.
And then we would have more terrain for wildlife sanctuaries and forests and greenery that would build back the streams and build back the species that are endangered and threatened or gone.
Right. One of the fascinating things with the Hudak interview was when he did talk about the cows eating the saplings that were growing trees over parts of streams that were giving shade to the fish. And once those trees are gone, the fish die. So it's really something that you have to really be mindful of when you see these cattle grazing in these areas. They are destroying not only the habitat for the animals that live on the plains, but they're also destroying the habitat for the fish in the streams.
Yeah, it was mind-blowing.
It was. He talked so much about endangered species that aren't, my word for it would be, sexy. Like, we don't really care about these species that are dying off because they're not things that we can relate to and say, oh, well, gee, that's terrible because I like those little fuzzy things, or I like looking at those. I mean, we're talking about species that people don't even hear about, that are just completely gone now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That aren't even endangered because they're already gone.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even be put on a list because they're just not.
Nobody cares.
No one cares about them.
And so, nobody knows about them.
So go vegan, for crying out loud. That fixes so
That's
much.
That's the message.
Yeah.
We stayed in Cheyenne, Wyoming at a True by Hilton. It was a very practical type of hotel. But the thing that I really liked about it, maybe you've seen this, they had a machine that filtered water that you could use to refill your bottles. And it had a counter on it that was counting how many plastic bottles you saved by refilling your bottle. I love this because, number one, when you're in a hotel, some places make you buy bottled water. They'll leave a couple of bottles in your room and there'll be a little note on it that says, these bottles cost such and such. And everybody needs water. And I'm kind of particular. I believe in drinking tap water, but I believe in drinking purified tap water. So this machine that was available for everyone was brilliant. And that's something I want to see everywhere. Filtered water that is available for drinking and for refilling bottles. Now, before we left on the trip, I had in the back of my mind that maybe we could take our water distiller with us, but we didn't. But we did bring a lot of containers of water. So we had a good amount of water with us to begin with, but it doesn't last forever. So I was really glad when we came across this system. We didn't get a microwave in our room at this hotel, but they did have a microwave in the lobby for anyone to use. And I had the opportunity to take the leftovers we had from our South Bend adventure at Pinellia's. We brought with us these big mugs, and we used them as bowls sometimes. So I put the Pinellia leftovers in these bowls and added water and heated them up. And we had Karen's favorite leftover food from an Asian restaurant, soup. It was really good. We got to Salt Lake City.
Right.
And this was amazing because have you ever driven cross country and you see the terrain change? You see the trees change and then it gets dry and then it gets rocky and you're on the moon in Utah.
Right. It was really wonderful to see the changes, especially after all of those plain states. And then to come into Utah was wow.
Yeah.
That was mind blowing. It did. It looked like we were on Mars or the moon. Or I don't know. I've never been to any of those places, but I've never even been across the country until now. But it was great. And Utah was fun.
Utah was fun. We ended up in Salt Lake City and we had some time, actually. We got in at a reasonable time. We weren't exhausted and we were able to walk around. And it's amusing because there's a lot of conversation about wearing masks this week because the rules keep changing. And we saw
most people wearing masks.
Most people wearing masks. Outside, maybe not as much.
Right.
Definitely
indoors.
I want
to tell you, Salt Lake City, Utah, you may think it's not a happening town, but downtown Salt Lake was happening.
It was happening.
And this was a first for Gary. I mean, it wasn't like there were droves of people, because there weren't, but the stores were open. The shops were open. The clubs looked like they were getting ready to open. I mean, I heard some...
They were blasting some music.
Some really cool DJ-type tunes coming out of a lot of these clubs. People getting ready. And this was a first for Gary because I actually went into a restaurant and picked up some food to go. Tell us about this restaurant.
We went to Zest Kitchen in Salt Lake City. They had a really great menu.
It was awesome. It was all vegan.
And it was extra awesome because we ordered, as we're walking there, we knew it was vegan and they had a lot of organic, but it was also gluten-free.
Yeah.
We didn't know that until we were walking there.
So you could eat pizza too, not just me.
Right. So we had a really nice pizza.
Yeah, it was great. It was a margarita. It was great. It was really good. We should have ordered two of those.
We should go back and get some.
I know. On the way back, we have to stop there again. I have a picture of it that we can actually post. It was just there was one slice left. It was actually just a margarita pizza, tomato and a little bit of almond cheese.
It was really tasty. Yeah. Oh, I got these stuffed mushrooms.
Yeah.
And everybody knows Gary doesn't eat mushrooms, so they were all for me.
Yeah. And I even shared my pizza with you.
They came stuffed with like a cashew cheese baked into the mushroom. And then they were sitting in a sauce, a basil red pepper coulis.
Right.
Was amazing.
Yeah, it was delicious. There was a little little shredded basil on the... on the pizza too, a little
it was really
chiffonade
good.
Of basil.
And then
people at this place, Zest, were so nice and so appreciative. And that's the other thing I want to talk about is, as people start to get out, and I know you're hearing this from a lot of other people, you know, these servers, these people that work in service, they are really risking their lives every time they wait on you. So please be respectful of these people serving your food and tip them outrageously.
Yeah.
I mean, really, just give them a little extra money because there's a lot of shortages now for people working in the restaurant business. And these folks at this place called Zest did such a tremendous job to make us feel like we were welcome and we were wanted there, and they went out of their way to let us know that the food was prepared in the best possible way, and it was just...
I think there was a little love in that food, Gary.
I think there was a lot of love in that food. It was really just a wonderful first time for me to actually eat restaurant food. And then we brought it back to the hotel, and we had a party in our hotel room. Again, yeah. There was no ice. We didn't have 25 pounds of ice like Omaha, but we made do.
Yeah. Okay, and then we hit Reno. Oh, and I forgot. I wanted to talk about this. So in Reno, we stayed at a Hampton Inn. We were staying in Hilton chain hotels most of the time, and Hampton is kind of on the lower end of the Hilton chains.
Right.
More family-oriented, and the rooms have microwaves in them.
Right, and we were starving when we got to Reno.
Starving.
Right? So we went to a grocery store.
We went to a grocery store.
And what did we get?
We went to the freezer section. Okay, this is not something that Carrie and Gary normally do.
No.
Because we like to make our own food.
We never do this.
But we investigated the frozen meals that are vegan out there.
Right.
And I want to comment on some of them.
Yes.
You
let's talk about
the
them.
Amy's burgers.
Right. I got the Amy's burgers. They were good.
They were good.
And they were microwavable.
And then we got the tofu scramble.
Tofu scramble.
What was great about this tofu scramble is... it was all organic ingredients, vegetables, tofu. It had some oil and salt,
but when you're starving.
When you're starving, you're on the road, it was a really good choice.
And you have a hotel that has a microwave.
It had potatoes in it, too.
Yes.
It was really fine.
And something else that we need to bring up that you had brought on the road with us were tortillas. And those came in really... handy.
That's true. I did a massive production event of 3 dozen tortillas a few weeks before we left. We ate 2 dozen of them before we left, but we brought the last dozen with us, and they were really handy.
And they stayed nice and fresh and cold because we had ice.
And we kept them in the cooler, yeah.
Right, and we didn't eat them until we got to Reno because we had the microwave. And they were delicious with the tofu scramble.
And with the burgers that we kind of crumbled up with some avocado. We were really feasting.
We did really well. We did really well with the food.
And then there was the Sweet Earth company.
Sweet Earth.
And we also got a few of their vegan items. They're not entirely vegan, but they do make some vegan items. So between Amy's and Sweet Earth, we did really well, and I was thinking for people that have health problems and they don't know how to cook and they want to start eating more healthfully, there are these meal delivery services, but if you're on a budget, you could do pretty well with these frozen entrees, and if you could learn just to make yourself a little salad, like throw some mesclun greens from a box that are already washed into a bowl with a little dressing on it, you could start moving in a healthier direction.
Yes, so they do make products that are available for you. Just look in your frozen food section, and there are so many more vegan products coming out on the market that are being put in the grocery stores. I just was reading on one of the sites that Walmart is starting to launch a Beyond Meat's vegan meatballs at Walmart's. And we saw a lot of Walmarts.
We saw a lot of Walmarts.
Wow,
yeah.
Walmarts everywhere.
Walmart is America.
Well, if they're going to be serving vegan meatballs, good for them.
Right.
And that's a good thing.
It's better than cow balls, right?
Cow balls. Better than cow balls, absolutely.
So we had a little fun in Reno with our microwave.
Yeah, it was great. And we were excited because Reno meant we had one more stop, and that was California.
California. And when we got to California, and we were greeted by our host, who actually was only going to be in her home for a couple of days, and we're house-sitting for her now, we weren't quite ready to get into our old Karen and Gary making all the food routine. We were still on the road in our mindset. So the first 2 days we were here, we went to restaurants.
Yeah, so another big breakthrough for me is I actually sat In a restaurant.
In outdoor dining.
Outdoor, of course. Okay. It's going to be a while before I sit indoors.
But we visited True Food Kitchen, and we've talked about them before. They are a chain. I don't know how many of them there are, if they're outside of California, but it's a group of restaurants that were co-founded by Dr. Andrew Weil.
Right. Tell us about Dr. Andrew Weil.
Well, he's in the alternative health movement. I don't agree with everything that he promotes, but he does encourage people eating more plants. And this restaurant offers lots of organic food, locally grown. It's not a completely vegan restaurant, but they have vegan and vegetarian options.
Right.
Their wait staff is very friendly.
Very friendly.
Very friendly. Of course, they were all wearing masks, and we as the diners were not, which was kind of scary.
Right. It was scary.
Right, but we did it.
Take off my mask for the first time when I was actually sitting somewhere.
And this is where I got the spinach and almond cheese pizza on a gluten-free crust.
Right.
Yeah, really.
And
good.
We asked, because a lot of times you should always ask if the gluten-free crust is also vegan, because a lot of times gluten-free crusts are made with dairy and eggs and things of that nature. So Karen asked, and we trusted them when they said, yes, it's also vegan. Yeah, pizza was great.
It was really good.
It was really great. I would go back and get
it. And you got the burger.
I did.
My burger boy got the burger. They make their own burger there. Thank you very much. I like when restaurants make their own food rather than relying on the Beyond Burger or the Impossible Burger.
Yeah.
And I'm glad those foods are out there, I guess, but I don't want to eat them.
Their burger was excellent. It's made with beans, and even they say it had mushrooms in it.
It had a portobello mushroom sneaked in there.
Yeah, it was really good because they hid the taste very well. It's called the Vegan Double Cheeseburger. It's a house-made patty with portobellos, walnuts, beets, kuzu, lettuce, pickled onions, and a vegan cheddar. And a veganaise, and it was just...
I'm getting hungry, Gary. We might have to go there.
We might have to go hit the...
We also visited an old haunt called Garden Fresh.
Yeah.
It's another one of those strip mall vegan Asian restaurants.
It was really wonderful.
And there was no indoor dining.
No, they actually just all takeout. They sealed their door with a table, and you walked up to the doorway, and probably the owner took your order, went in the back and cooked it, and brought it out. And I got the... It was a curry dish. It was potatoes and chunks of tofu. I also splurged and got a fried rice that had a bunch of vegetable fried rice with little bits of plant meat in it. Like, I guess it was a ham substitute. We just went nuts. Normally, we don't do this at all, but we figured, you know what? One more day, let's party.
One more day of salt, oil, and sugar.
Yeah, so even the great Karen Hartglass can fall off the wagon, and it's okay.
It's okay. I was craving that old-fashioned stir-fry. It was a vegetable chow fun. So it was a rice noodle with shredded cabbage and bean sprouts.
It was still pretty clean, even though...
For most people.
But for us, it was really just splurging.
We had some leftovers, and you know what I did with them?
Yeah, you do this a lot. It's really great.
I do this a lot. I make soup. I put all the leftovers together, add a bunch of water, and it's just this wonderful
soup. And you add mushrooms. You always add mushrooms.
Oh, yes. I added fresh shiitake mushrooms.
Right. And after that, we cleaned up our act, and we've been eating pretty cleanly.
Yeah, we're back.
We're back, yeah. We went to a family. My family all lives out here. We went to a family barbecue yesterday with all of my vaccinated family, and I got to meet my great nephew, and I got to see my great niece, and it was great. But we brought a really clean salad. We brought really clean tofu, contributed with that, and it was back to being clean eaters again.
We found a 2-pound block of tofu.
Yes.
Which was really fun to work with.
A giant slab of tofu. I'm going to go back and get more of that.
They were fun because you could marinate, braise it with different things, and then bake it, and it gets this nice brown coating on the outside, and then you can slice it. It was really a work of art.
It was the London broil of tofu. It really was. I roasted some garlic, and I smeared it all over the tofu before baking it, or during the baking process. It was delicious. It was really just
great to be back in society.
Yeah, not looking at people on Zoom, but actually looking at real faces. And I had to pinch myself continuously because I couldn't even believe we were there. We drove door to door, basically, from Forest
Hills. From our house to your brother's house.
Right. It was really wonderful.
Now, another thing, we are very fortunate to be staying at a home that has a garden in the backyard and loads of fruit trees. And I am in heaven.
Yes, it's truly the Garden of Eden.
So every morning we're outside, and we've been eating mostly outside because the weather has been pretty moderate and the backyard gets a lot of sun in the morning. So I go out and I forage, and there's a mulberry tree or a mulberry bush, whatever.
All around the mulberry
bush,
yeah.
And there are these lovely little strands of mulberries dropping, and I'm munching on them in the morning.
It's truly a Garden of Eden out there.
There's a cherry tree, and the cherries are just starting to ripen, so I've been enjoying those. I share some of those with you, Gary. The fig tree and the apricot tree are loaded with fruit. They're not ripe yet.
They're about to get ripe, and we're about to do a lot of picking. And there was a fun day we had yesterday where we picked a bunch of citrus, and our host not only has yellow lemons, but she also has yellow limes. So we squeezed a bunch of lemon and limes, and we made a bunch of juice, and we're going to be living off of that for the summer.
That's right. So, you know, I mentioned this a few weeks ago. I like to drink a hot lemon water drink in the morning, and I usually do it with lemon or lime rinds that I freeze. Well, now we have access to so much juice that I'm having the juice diluted with water, and I chopped up all the rinds that we juiced and I put them in the freezer, and maybe I'll get through them here, or maybe they're going to come home with us. I don't know, but I am not wasting my rinds.
No, that's a good song. I'm not wasting my rinds. That's a good title.
I'm not going to waste my rinds.
Yeah,
I don't think
that
so.
That would be like a Bonnie Raitt tune, I think.
Oh, there you
I'm
go.
I'm not wasting my rinds. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I feel really at home foraging. There's something in me, I don't know, is it in you, just to be surrounded by a Garden of Eden of ripe, delicious fruits and herbs that you can just pick and munch on?
Right, and not have to do anything with. Just forage
away. That's right. You know, I'm reading the new edition of a book called Unnatural Order by Jim Mason. And he wrote the original book in the early 90s. It blew me away. And I couldn't wait to read it again. I was thinking of reading the actual book again, but they just came out with the new edition, which I don't think is very different.
What's it about, Karen?
And the reason why I'm bringing it up is because he talks about how humanity and our world really changed when we started agriculture.
Right.
Like some 10,000 years ago. And how we've really distorted our understanding of history. There's no real way to know what happened 10,000 years ago or a million years ago to know how we got to where we are today. But it's interesting how there's a meat-centered, almost male version of what happened. And now more women are getting into anthropology and kind of putting their own spin on what's happened before. And there's more evidence that shows that we were gatherer-hunters, not hunter-gatherers, but mostly foragers, gatherers, picking and finding fruit, and that life was not difficult, that it was a leisurely life. Because we're given the impression that life was very difficult.
Right.
And that people were always searching for food. But the world was lush, and the people learned how to move to another place when they would finish eating what was available in one spot and let it replenish, and they would move somewhere else, and life was easier. Now, this is one interpretation. I haven't finished rereading the book yet, but I look forward to speaking with the author about it. But reading it and then going out in the backyard and just enjoying all this fruit, which is not, the garden is not really maintained. It's irrigated. It gets water from time to time. She's got a sprinkler system.
A drip irrigation system.
A drip irrigation system.
She's done a great job with that.
But there's not a lot of maintenance here because this stuff just wants to grow.
And wants to grow naturally.
And we can just enjoy the benefits of it.
And she's very respectful to the fact that it wants to grow naturally and it isn't well manicured. But in essence, because of that, because it has been arranged so brilliantly, as far as I'm concerned, it makes sense. So you have these little patches of wild strawberries, you have these little patches of wild mulberries, and then there's, of course, the fruit trees, which coexist wonderfully together. We are just really going to be the beneficiaries of this
Garden of Eden.
This bounty.
Just excites me.
And what a contrast from driving through plain states, seeing a lot of sagebrush, and then coming to truly paradise. When you're speaking of California.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful. Well, I had a good time.
We will continue sharing our adventure.
Well, Karen, it's great talking to you from sunny California.
Mm.
I hope you have a delicious week.
Gary, you too. And everybody.
Yes. Have a delicious week.